The doors are closing. Train departing. Please hold on.
It's now time for the Portland Transit Lane Podcast, a weekly podcast that looks into the events of transit in Portland and what's ahead. Now, your host, transit expert, Lane Jensen.
Riding in a bus down the boulevard and the pace was pretty packed.
Yeah.
But a seesaw had to stand with the perverts in the back. It was smelling like a locker room. There was junk all over the floor. We're already packed in like sardines for stopping to pick up more.
Hello and welcome to episode number 7, lucky 7 of the Portland Transit Lane Podcast. I'm your host, Lane. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today. We've got a very, very special guest, the start of any TriMet blog in Portland. This is kind of like the grandfather of all TriMet blogs in Portland. The one, the only, Dan Christensen. And yes, I ask him the hard questions, so that's going to be awesome. Feel free to subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a comment. Leave us some stars. That'd be great. Feel free to email me, portlandtransitlane@gmail.com. Joe, I appreciate the comment or the email from last week. Really do appreciate that. Feel free to give us a call, 971-238-7453. Leave your comments there. Also, feel free to tweet me at PDX_TransitLane. All those methods I do get instantly no matter where I'm at. It might just take me a little while to respond due to other obligations, but I promise I will respond back to you. I promise that. So, before we get into the interview with Dan, which is going to take up most of the show today, I do want to cover some news about TriMet. So, without a further ado, TriMet Weekly.
TriMet Weekly, covering the news of the week. Here's your anchor, Lane Jensen.
All right, so covering the news of TriMet this week. And this is a big one. And this comes from Elliot Nijes over at the Oregonian. You know, ever since Joe Rose left, a lot of good stories are coming out of the Oregonian about TriMet. It's amazing. You know, we won't read into that any further. But listen to the title of this article. TriMet waives lower fines, alternative sentences for fare evasion. Okay. Basically, TriMet has realized that, TriMet Tuesdays are getting overloaded at the courthouse. And I mean seriously, seriously overloaded. So, listen to this. TriMet has issued nearly 21,000 citations for fare violations in the past year and excluded 2,500 alleged fare dodgers from TriMet property for at least 30 days. It has also issued 2,300 warnings. That's just crazy. Okay? Right now, TriMet cases are handled in traffic court, and community service is no longer an option. City of Portland previously handled fare evasion through community court, or so-called TriMet Tuesday. People cited for fare evasion could have their fine reduced, or they could agree to complete 8 hours of community service, after which the charge was dismissed. But listen to this. Many first-time offenders who bother to take the ticket to court see their fine pleaded down to a lesser amount. And then also on top of that, people who can't take the time off from work, can't get to court, and they end up paying the higher fines anyways, you know. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Like right now, Dallas Area Transit can pay a $50 administration fee with no declaration of guilt if they act within 30 days. Muni, down in San Francisco, decriminalized fare evasion, creating a $112 administrative fine. And Utah, oh, listen to this. In January, they reduced fare evasion fines to $100 with smaller fines for infractions like smoking on rail properties. Why hasn't TriMet done this? Because they want the money. Now, have they ever put in their budget how much money they get from fare evasions? No. Why is that? Because when people plead the down to $60, that all goes to court. TriMet sees nothing of that. So this money that they actually get from the people who don't go to court or plead, fight their ticket, it comes to TriMet, and TriMet doesn't report it. There is nowhere in the budget that reports the money coming from the TriMet fines. Why? Because it's extra money that they can put in their pocket to spend on capital freaking projects again. Watch the money trail, people. You follow the money, and you're going to find where the problems are at TriMet. That's what you got to do with TriMet. It's crazy, but it's true. And people don't want to realize it, but just follow the money. Because, again, there's no, you know, so if you take, you know, 21,000 citations for fair violations, okay? If you take that 21,000 and you multiply that by $175, that is $3.675 million. I repeat, $3.675 million, okay, that TriMet could potentially get from fair evaders on just their tickets, okay? I mean, seriously, what can $3.5 million do? Restore frequent service. It could buy some better buses. It can really improve some stops. You know, and it can improve some stops along the lines. You know, along the lines. It's crazy what $3.5 million can do. But does TriMet report that anywhere in their budget? No, because, well, I know they can't depend on it, but still, why don't they even report it, you know, after the fact on their next year's budget that they got that money? Because it disappears. The money just comes into TriMet, and it magically disappears. It's amazing how money can disappear at TriMet, because it happens all the time. And speaking of improving bus shelters, and this is a good one. Right now, Portland's in a battle with Broomfield, Colorado. And why do you say that Portland's in a battle with Broomfield, Colorado? Because of the worst bus stop in America. And I mean the worst bus stop in America, okay? This is from a blog called streetsblog.org. And they're striving to find the worst bus stop in America. So today they put a bus stop against Portland, Oregon and Broomfield, Colorado. Now, the one in Portland, guess where it's at? East End Morrison Bridge. Now, why do you ask that I bring this up? Because this bus stop isn't going to be in use for at least another year. Why, do you ask? Why are they bringing a bus stop in on this that's not even being used? Because the Morrison Bridge has a weight limit of 10 tons, which means TriMet buses are not allowed to cross the Morrison Bridge right now. They're detoured over the Hawthorne. So, again, why? Because it's still, in people's minds, is an active bus stop. Now, here's what the submitter, Adam Herstein, wrote about the bus stop. Bus stop is on a 1950s-era bridge viaduct that doubles as a highway on and off-ramp for Interstate 5. Multnomah County maintains the bridge, and TriMet is responsible for the bus stop. The bus stop can only be accessed by a steep staircase. Okay? And the access point for the staircase has a few bike racks, bike cases, and a lot of homeless people. So, now here's a Broomfield, Colorado. And this is along U.S. 287 in Broomfield, Colorado. This is from contributor Aaron Schultz. And here's what he says. This bus stop serving the city and county Broomfield and RTD, Regional Transit District, both of them should be shamed, sits on a highway and could have taken me to school and to work. But there is no sidewalk to the bus stop, no bench, and the bus stop is on a sign forbidding pedestrians. Furthermore, the bus stop could get more use, as a new spur is intended to alleviate traffic along the highway, and the bus connects to a regional station. However, the nearest pedestrian crossings are nearly a mile in each direction. This bus stop is the sorriest I've ever seen. So, again, the bus stop is on a no pedestrian sign, folks. The bus stop is on a no pedestrian sign. It's ridiculous. That is pretty sorry. But I have to admit, the Morrison Bridge stop, if you've ever taken the 15 eastbound and gotten on there, that's pretty sorry too, because it's bad. It's really, really bad. So, again, that's streetusa.streetblogs.org. Give Portland a vote. Let's see if we can try to fix up that station. Maybe even get a, I don't know. Maybe we can actually get somebody in there to make it a little better. Maybe put in a bus shelter or something. That'd be nice. Or, you know, even a light to indicate, oh, people want the bus. That'd be helpful. So, anyway, so we got that under our belts. Now, the meat of the podcast. Yes, and I'm talking about the interview. No, I'm not talking about the movie with those two crazy guys, Seth Rogen. I'm talking about Dan Christensen and, you know, his thoughts on everything that's going on, how he got started in blogging. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and finish this podcast off with that interview. Again, folks, feel free to follow us at PDX Transit Lane on Twitter, portlandtransitlane@gmail.com. Call us 971-238-7453. Give us a like on iTunes, guys, please. Anything would help. Now, the main act, Dan Christensen. So I'm here with Dan Christensen today. Thanks, Dan, for joining me for this interview. So let me ask you, Dan, how did you get started doing the blogging and everything that you've been doing for so long?
Well, it started in 2008 when we had the big snow in Portland. We had the record-setting snowfall, and it was crazy. And everyone I knew, the bus drivers, was working hard. I was sleeping at work. I did, 18 and 17-hour days and was up at ridiculous hours in the morning. And then so all I had was this really positive, hardworking experience. And then when I turned on the media, all I heard was how horrible the bus drivers were doing. And I was like, there is something wrong. There is something fundamentally wrong when the only story that's getting out is by people who are complaining and not the people who are doing the work. So that's when I started the blog. That's when I thought, you know what? I'm going to let people know what it's like to be a bus driver.
So what, how has that progressed from then until now, and because I know you've been, covered by the media a few times yourself.
Yeah. Let's see. I started with, I think it was called TriMet Confidential, and then TriMet got a little pushy about the name being in there, so I then switched it to Roll Easy Blog. Let's see how else. Yeah, I've been covered by the media, both positive and negative. What's really funny is you can say positive things, and I try to be what I call realistically positive about what's going on and what it's like to be a bus driver. But man, you say a negative thing, and you can be in for a media storm. No one will pay attention to anything positive you've done. It will be all negative all the time. We are geared as human beings to focus on negative things.
That's just crazy.
No, think about evolutionary. You're living in a village and you're walking down to the water hole to get water. It's not the 7,000 times you succeed. It's the one time you didn't see the lion behind the bush. Right?
Yeah,
so negative sells, because negative consequences far outweigh the positive.
So let me ask you, Dan, how long have you been how long have you been working at TriMet? How long have you been driving a bus?
Well, I was hired 9 years ago, this November. November 1st is my hire date.
Wow.
And
you've been driving a bus that entire time, right?
That'll be 10 years ago this November 1st. I'm in my 9th year right now.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah.
And
yeah, and I've all bus except for a short stint in rail training to drive the MAX train.
And obviously, it looks like you haven't proceeded with the rail. You stuck with the bus.
I passed everything. I didn't like driving the rail.
Why didn't you like driving the rail?
Well, I always say that driving a bus is like being in a fleet of ships. You get your orders, but it's you, the captain, that it's up to you to get it done. You have to make the calls. You have to decide. There's no one looking over your shoulder. You have a mission, which is your schedule and your route and picking people up, but it's up to you to get it done. Whereas for me, light rail was sort of like being a musician in an orchestra. They tell you what to play, when to play, how to start, how to stop, how loud to play, how quiet to play, what to do. They tell you everything. You are under control. See, we have dispatch. They have control. Control tells them everything. And so I didn't like that. I want to be the captain. I don't want to be a trumpet player. And a lot of people... A lot of people go to light rail, and I'm not faulting this, they go there because they're having issues with people. And bless them, good luck. If there's people who are better equipped to handle that sort of work environment, if it gets them away from people that they can't handle. And I say that's great.
So let me, so talking about people and dealing with people, Dan, what's your take then on, you know, the recent spike in driver assaults on the buses and whatnot?
That's a tough one. There's some people that always blame the drivers and some people that always blame the riders. I just think it's I don't know. Here's what I overall think. There's not a lot of accurate data collected. There's not a lot of accurate information collected about what's going on buses so that things like this may be predictable. It may be something people can figure out ahead of time, but a lot of that isn't done. A lot of that isn't... focused on. So what ends up happening is the attacks look out of the blue because we don't know. Is it related? Like, for instance, could we collect data, enough data to know that, you know, for every X amount of people that don't pay fare, one of them's hostile, or if there's a direct relationship between those two, right? So maybe we can know that these lines that have the lowest paid ridership because of people just getting on without paying, and all we do is press a button. But there may be some connection. We don't know because we don't know how much. There's none. No one has the data. When you press a button says fare evasion, that if it's one person or 50 getting on at that stop, it only counts as one incident of fare evasion. So it's not one per person. It's just one for everybody. So it'd be like a store who, instead of knowing that they had, you know, 30 things stolen, just knew one person stole, you know, a shoplifter. That wouldn't tell them very much. That wouldn't tell them, you know, what items are they after, etc. So you got to have the data. I don't know if it's intentional. I don't know if it's through laziness. I don't know if it's just maybe they're not thinking of it. But TriMet does a very poor job of collecting data, effective data, and aggregating all the data sources we have together. So we can see bigger friends. So we don't know if our paid security or our police are in the right spot, because we really don't know where the trouble's happening. We know where it's happened, but that doesn't tell us where it's happening.
That's ridiculous. Wouldn't you think that TriMet would want to know, you know, or be able to figure out where the next assault would be to protect the drivers?
It's a matter of priority. What's a priority? Is it more important to look good to look good to the public, or is it more important to look good or to be good to the drivers? Those aren't necessarily the same thing, right?
True.
It could be. They might be in alignment, but it isn't necessarily by definition the same thing. In fact, it could be that, you know, the desires of how they want it to be presented to the public might be in conflict with driver safety. I would prefer not to think that, but it could be. I don't know.
So Dan, let me ask you. So you've been driving, you said, for almost 10 years. Have you ever been assaulted or anything like that while you've been driving?
I don't know. I've been touched. I've been grabbed. One guy tried to hit me and missed. I've been threatened. But that's like five incidences, like, it'll say one every 2 years. It's been a long time, been about 3 years since anything happened to me. But I've never been, like, injured. The worst injury I ever had was having a guy in a wheelchair come down the ramp and crush my toes.
Ooh.
Yeah. Took me out of work a couple days. That was a bit of a shocker.
I bet.
Yep.
So let me ask you then, what do you think a good solution would be to, you know, prevent these assaults from happening? You know, since you're in there day in and day out, you know, you've experienced a little bit of it yourself. What do you think might be a good solution?
Well, I think the solution to a lot of problems at TriMet is complete open access to all collected data. No more secrets. It's not like TriMet has the secret launch codes to atomic weapons. I want everything that they collect. You can anonymize for privacy, anonymize drivers' names, or so you're not really dealing with specific people. But all the data that's collected from every time an operator presses a button to run times to load levels, everything to be on the internet, completely open and available. No more secrets. It's not required that anything is secret at TriMet. Yeah, maybe things that haven't happened. So, like if they're going to do fare checking or something like that, that's in the future. But once you do it, we need to know where it was. We need to know how effective it was. But they don't, you know, they want the information hidden, and that way you only get a little sip of that information through Freedom of Information Acts, right?
Right.
You have to ask for specific information. They get to interpret that and give you what they think. I think there should be nothing secret. That's the first step, right? Because if data is available and they come out and say, oh, like they did a year or two ago where they said, violence against drivers is down 22%. From when to when and how did they measure that? And if without the data, we don't know if they're just not measuring things or if they change their criteria. I had fights in my bus where, you know, 8 years ago, I'd have been filling out a report and there'd have been a record of it. where they tell me, if it's off the bus, just drive, no report. That changes how much information TriMet's collecting. Like, if there's fights breaking out on the bus, it may be relevant to the driver that's attacked 6 months from now. Like, maybe the situation's heating up. But if they deny that this information is out there, you know, if they don't collect it, well, when you stop collecting information, it shows up in data. You'll see, oh, we're getting 20 reports a month or a week or a day, and now we're getting 5. And you go, some criteria has changed, right?
Right.
They came out 2 years ago and said like a 24% decrease. It's like, I have no doubt that they have their data to prove that. But I want the source. I don't want their interpretation. I don't want their information. I want the sources. Because if that's out there, then anybody can put the numbers together and start to figure out things. And instantly, if that bias, like I said, if there's a bias towards representing things positive for the media versus positive for safety, it'll be thumbprinted in the data. They won't be able to hide that. So I don't understand why TriMet hides data. Like, for instance, I don't understand why knowing where all their our security guards, like we have paid security guards, where are they? How come I can't get on a train and go 8 miles on the train and not see a security guard, but I can be on a bus for 8 years and only see a security guard on there 2 or 3 times, right? So you have a couple problems. One is the data. We don't know what's being reported to us, and we don't have the source. Two, we don't know where the resources are being put, and if that coordinates with the violence or if it coordinates with a political agenda. I don't know. I don't automatically assume that there's some sort of a bad agenda, but I would say if all the security is being focused on light rail or light rail transit centers and not on buses, we may have a difference of opinion when we look at the data and see where the actual problems are.
Yeah, agreed. Because most of the attacks on operators are, well, as far as I know, all the attacks on operators have been bus operators and not MAX operators.
Right. And it comes down to institutions want you to take what they say, right? So they don't want you to question it. And they say, there's nothing we can do more to secure bus drivers. We're doing the most we can. Okay. So my hypothetical situation is, let's say tonight a driver is unfortunately shot and killed by a rider or stabbed or it dies violently, right? Mm-hmm. It's TriMet coming out tomorrow and putting up their hands and saying, no, we're not changing a thing. Absolutely nothing will change. We're not reviewing anything because we're already doing the most we can do. Now, you and I know that's not what they'll do, right? Mm-hmm. You and I know all of a sudden there would be changes and, oh, we got to do more and we got to... What I keep saying is, let's pretend that person died and let's start Monday doing more, right? Let's assume it's happened and stop assuming it's never going to happen because there's no magic force field protecting bus drivers.
Yeah, it's not like a simulator that you can put a training bus driver in and, you know, simulate driving a bus.
Right. So it's like, let's say it did happen. Now what? What are you going to do? Well, let's start down that path now and look at what we can do. Not this, it's what I call a false narrative. Their narrative is that nothing's happened, so nothing will happen.
It really sounds like to me that they're trying to look at the world through rose-colored glasses and pretend that nothing is ever going to be wrong.
I can't tell you. I know they sit and cringe at the thought of something happening because that would mean they have to change. But The problem is because we don't have the information, because people who make bad decisions are not held accountable in an institution where everything is secret or covered up or only available through Freedom of Information Act. Like, whose freaking idea is it that that nothing's going to go wrong, right? That nothing's going to go, no driver's going to be hurt simply because it's never happened in the past. Where we've had cities around us like Seattle and San Francisco and Los Angeles, where we've had fatalities of bus drivers and bus drivers shot and stabbed. And we've even had a few stabbings here. But, you know, let's not assume that. And let's not just say things to cover our ass. Let's get out and figure this out.
Yeah. So what is your take on those bus drivers or those driver shields that some transit companies are putting on their buses? What's your take on that?
I don't know. like I said, I think there. I don't know because we don't have the data, of course. But we may find that it might be better once we get the information to apply our assets where they do the most good. And that might have the same result of that shield. But I don't know. I think there's a little disingenuous of TriMet who says, we asked drivers if they want the shield and they said no. Like, they don't listen to anything else the drivers say, right?
Right.
They don't say, we asked the drivers and they wanted a pay raise. We're going to give them a pay raise. No, they say, well, drivers say they want money, but we're not going to give it to them, right?
Exactly.
Or they say, drivers say they're not getting enough time on this run, but we're not going to add any more time to the schedule to make sure they get it done. They don't really listen to the feedback from the drivers. So all of a sudden, they walked around their departments and they had some drivers who, you know, probably trying to impress the boss. They say, hey, you want this? No. They ask four or five people. They say, no. Done deal. They didn't ask all the drivers. You know, and there's drivers in some areas of town don't need them. There's drivers in other areas of town, they're like, I wish I had a steel shield around me. You know, it's like, but I don't know that's the answer. What I do know is we need to find out what the questions are, where the information is. We need to get access to that.
So out of your personal experience driving a bus, Dan, how many times over your 9 years have you seen a fare inspector or a security guard on your bus?
I've been fare inspected 3 times in almost 10 years, and I've had security on my bus either 3 or 4 times, I guess, in that time. I've had police on my bus twice, but that's in 10 years.
Right. Now, were the police doing a fare mission, or were they on there for another reason?
One was a fare check one time, and one was, I think there was some emergency thing. They had a bomb sniffer dog come through the bus.
So basically, out of the 10 years that you've driven, almost 10 years that you've worked for TriMet, you could say that less than once a year, you've seen some sort of security personnel on your bus.
Yeah. Yeah, that's accurate.
So basically, it's showing that TriMet, you know, the safety of TriMet doesn't really lie in the buses, but TriMet thinks the safety lies on the rails.
Yeah, there's a lot more on light rail. Because I think resources are being doled out based on capital investment. right? So light rail's a huge expense, a huge capital investment, and that's why they're deciding to put things on light rail. And that where the drivers are getting hit and hurt and beat and shot and stabbed and getting attacked, well, those places don't have as high a capital investment.
Right, like, you know, 92nd and Flavelle, or, you know.
Or just, you know, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to look at a data spreadsheet and say, hey, these five runs have more trouble, these five runs have none, right?
Right.
You could definitely start to eliminate a lot of the runs that are almost never problematic, either because they have such low volume or where they're located or seldom problematic. And then there's other ones that are very problematic and very troublesome. And this is what ends up happening is drivers become indifferent. They don't care. They just, okay, whatever, come on, that's okay. So it's basically surrendering. And so the buses are full of people who are endangering each other. I've had more fights between people on my bus than anything involving me. And, you know, that's what happens. That's acceptable.
Just because TriMet wants to keep their security people on what costs more to run.
Look, I don't have the data.
Right.
I'm doing this all anecdotally from what I see, but I believe so from what I see. You know, I have no evidence to the contrary. You know, you'll see the light rail, you know, what they call fare missions, where the fare inspectors and go out. They're not stopping at bus stops. Right?
Right.
They're stopping at light rails. You always see them at light rail locations. And let's see the data. How many times are you boarding buses versus boarding light rails? Mm-hmm. I got a feeling that data, if it was open and available, would tell you a different story than we're being told.
Oh, I'm sure. And that's probably why the data isn't available, is because the real TriMet doesn't want the real story getting out.
I don't think it's – yeah, right. I think it's reverse. They've never put out the data. That way they can say what they want. They get to be the, you know, the arbitrators of what data's exposed and said. It's not one of those things where they're trying to cover up. It's just it's a cover-up friendly environment because it's always been secretive.
Jeez, which is absolutely crazy.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you, Dan, for joining me today. I really do appreciate it.
Another one rides the bus. Another one rides the bus. Ow! Another one rides the bus. Hey, hey! Another one rides the bus.